Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, as you well know, I'm an emotional guy, and I tell you what, I have a very strong bond with this man that's coming on next. He's Gene the Bitter Ender Andrews. We first bonded our brotherhood. Actually, I knew him very well before the Battle of Charlottesville, August the 12th of 2017. We rode to Charlottesville. We fought the Battle of Charlottesville together. We withstood everything that the stinking BLM, the stinking Jews, the stinking Antifa could throw at us. We survived. But we formed that brotherhood, I mean, in by God fire. And so we're bringing him on now. He's a very sincere guy. He's one of the smartest people I know. He's got a mind like a daggum computer. But he's fired up today. So I wanted to get him on while he's still got that fire. And Sister Nancy fits in. They fit together like gloves. They're joined at the soul, velcroed at the soul. So anyway, Bitter Ender, God bless you, sir. I'm so glad you're here. So just say hello to all of our family and just take off with let her rip, brother.
Well, I think all of our Southern brothers and sisters are upset with what happened this week with tearing down the Arlington Monument. I think we said about a month ago on the Blood River Radio, we thought this was just a set-up deal to stall and say that we could write to our worthless slugs in Congress and maybe they could do something about it. They had no intention of listening to the people out there. And I think the reason that they wanted this monument torn down because it was so important to so many white Southerners. And the government in Washington hates white people and especially hates white Southerners. And so yes, they were going to tear this monument down regardless. If the Supreme Court voted 9-0 to keep it, they were going to find some way to tear it down, just as a slap in our face. And, of course, all of this started really going into high gear with that thug, that drug dealer that died in Minneapolis, that George Floyd. It was just the excuse they needed to go after everything. I would recommend to our listeners to go online after the program's over, of course, go online to American Renaissance and read the December 22nd article by Gregory Hood and talking about the Arlington Monument and why the reasons behind taking it down. And he had an interesting summary in there. He said, appealing to limited government, the Constitution, or the law is doomed when mob violence, a judge's whim, or the government's spite can overturn a century of our historical precedent in order to honor a dead black thug. And I think that's, in a nutshell, that's the whole story about why this monument was torn down. The Reconciliation Monument, I'm assuming they don't want to reconciliate with us. I guess we'd be better to look, as Mindy has said, as the League of the South has said, the Southern National Congress, Mindy Esposito, and all of the Southern organizations, we'd be better to look somewhere else and get away from this rotten to the core government. I always like the introduction explaining where Blood River came from in South Africa. You know, I hope someday we'll turn the Potomac into Blood River.
Amen. Yes.
That'd be the end of all of that. And only three Southerners were wounded. And 30,000 yes, of them died in the Potomac River.
Excellent.
The
water excellent.
Red all the way down to the Chesapeake Bay. And from then yes, on, it was known, instead of the Potomac, it's known as Blood River. Now, there's happy thoughts. We're not all
yes, it is,
everything. We get some yes, happy thoughts going on here.
I'll second that, man. You're talking
well,
my language,
brother.
Well,
I think it's only going to get worse before it gets any better. I've listened to people in the Sons of Confederate Veterans. They put out a thing, said, oh, we don't want to go up there and demonstrate. Our lawyers are going to handle this. We're going to take care of it.
Well, rock.
As usual, it didn't. Like they handled taking care of the saving the monuments on Monument Avenue in Richmond and everywhere else in the country. So the thugs in Washington and the criminal element that runs our government, they aren't afraid of our image. You know, they don't care what kind of image we have, as long as they're safe behind their barricades and their military and their police thugs and FBI thugs out there protecting them. They do anything they want to. They're not afraid of the courts. Courts are on their side. The law be damned. They don't care what the law is. They're going to do what they want to do. So anyway, you know, I think we're getting to a point, really, the country breaking apart. Either we kill our enemies or they're going to kill us, or
yes,
we'll have to
it.
Live like the Russian peasants under Stalin, or just the workers in that movie, The Hunger Games, that all they did was just work to supply, to take care of the empire, and then they'd pick out a few every year they'd kill off for entertainment. That may not be a fictional movie. We may be getting to the point. That's what life in the former United States of America is going to be like. This thing this week was just it was the epitome of the arrogance of the government, what they can do and how they can ignore the law. And then you couple that at the same time this week by the liberal judges out in Colorado saying, no, we don't like this presidential candidate, so he can't run for president. Can't run, can't be listed in Colorado. So, you know, I think, you know, I think there'd be a majority of the states that say, well, we don't want Joe Biden running in our state. We'll just throw him off the ballot here. So that would be a nice in-your-face to them if about 25 or 30 states said, no, Joe Biden's guilty of treason. He hadn't protected the United States, hadn't protected our border. He's stolen money. He's a traitor. And because of that, we're not going to allow him to run in Louisiana, Tennessee, Kentucky, Texas, Arkansas, Wyoming, you know, wherever, and just throw him off the ballot. So anyway,
you're on fire,
Gene. In interesting times. So I will turn it over to Nancy. I know she has some items she wanted to cover. And then later on, after our first segment or two, I've got a book review I'd like to cover.
Great.
For Mike Grissom's newest book, The Southern Book of Quotes. And it's a great one. And it really ties into what went on in Arlington. So although it's not mentioned in there, it was people who were representing the South as governors and politicians in the South back when we had politicians with backbones were predicting what was going to happen if we knuckled under to the federal government and their forced integration. So, Nancy, go ahead and kind of keep us up to date with what you have, please.
Well, a couple things. I got a nice printout from Buddy Kirtland today. Actually, it's from the League of the South, and I had marked one thing that I think applies to what has happened in the last few days with regards to the destruction, removal of the Reconciliation Monument, which is an affront to all Southerners. And it is nothing but a slap. And I call it the very last straw. To me, it's the very last straw. But this is just something from the League that says, pleading our case to this central government is fruitless, regardless of the venue. They have not listened, and they will not listen. I have always believed it was good to fight, to protest, to contest, to do everything you can to bring your point up in front of these no good bastard politicians. But let's put it this way. You cannot win against City Hall when they have something in mind. They will bring it up repeatedly for months and years. They might let you speak for 3 minutes. They might even let you speak for 4 minutes. But by golly, they're going to do what they want to do. And that's what they've done with the Reconciliation Monument. To me, it was really like they had the Southerners, at any rate, hanging by a thread on Monday, that there might be hope that there this magnificent, irreplaceable monument would not be removed. But oddly enough, on Tuesday, there was a change of heart. I know, like you said, Gene, and we all agree, this was a foregone conclusion, but it's a dirty, 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 filthy deal. At some point, maybe on the next break, on the next segment, I might read something, a little short history for people who may be not aware of the history of the monument and the significance. Some people refer to this as being anti-Semitic because the artist, the sculptor, he was actually a Jewish Confederate. I've done quite a bit of research on Moses Ezekiel. He attended VMI and he fought under Breckinridge in the Battle of Newmarket. Some people say that they were saying that this could be an excuse that by removing this, it was anti-Semitic. But apparently they don't care about this being anti-Semitic. It's people who question the Holocaust who are anti-Semitic. But at any rate, this is irreplaceable, absolutely irreplaceable. Whatever you could say about Moses Ezekiel, he was a magnificent artist, and America doesn't create artists like him today. There's no way that this can be replicated. It's just totally impossible. We don't have artists like that who can do anything like that. This man was trained in Rome. He won many honors in overseas. He had the background and the ability that was just incomparable. So
we have to go to a quick break, Sister Nancy. We'll go right back to you after this break. Be right back, people.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpochTimes.com.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
Looking for an IT partner that truly understands your needs? Managed IT Services is the answer. We meet with you regularly to discuss your goals and form a tailored technology plan. Our customers have called us a trusted advisor who delivers. When it comes to IT, we do it all. Firewalls, cloud storage, server migration, and more. Say goodbye to long-term contracts and hello to a team that earns your business month after month. Call 801-706-6980 now and let Managed IT Services transform your IT experience.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I'll tell you what, Gene and Sister Nancy have unloaded. I wish we had 2 more hours to cover this, what we're going to cover this 1 hour. But I was going to ask these questions to Gene and Nancy because they are joined at the soul. They were brothers and sisters when it comes to Southerners, Southern independence. We idolize we really respect our ancestors. We love our Southern heroes, our Confederate heroes. But, you know, I hear these people. And a lot of good people that we've had on the show, they'll say, oh, well, if we go up there and protest to Washington, D.C., if we go to Arlington Cemetery, Gene and Nancy, I'm talking to y'all, they want us to provoke us. Well, before I go further, I'm going to say, well, by God, good. Let's about damn time we were provoked. It's about time we get off our peaceful, passive ass and keep trying the same crap that has never worked, sooner or later, you have to affix bayonets, rhetorically speaking. You have to. Nobody has ever won liberty or ever recovered liberty back peaceably, especially when you got these satanic bastards that are gathering us, Gene and Nancy, that are communists. I'm getting ready to shut up. They're communists. They hate God. They hate white people. They hate the Constitution. They hate the rule of law. Like one of the dead old white people said, a republic like we have, like they put in 1789, was made for righteous people. So, Mr. Dear Brother Gene, why are these people afraid of being provoked so much? When will the patriots ditch this losing idea of passivity and finally realize what has to be done? Brother Gene and Sister Nancy, you can comment on that too before you go back to your history teacher, a history lesson. Go ahead, Brother Gene.
Well, I think, you know, the league and the Southern Independence Association and the Southern National Congress, and all of us have it right. Just disassociate ourselves from the federal government. I've talked to people since this thing in Arlington happened and saying they don't want to reconciliate. That's fine. I will never, ever stand and pledge allegiance to their rotten flag again.
Hell
no. I've done that for the last time. That now is the enemy's flag.
Yes,
I look at that flag just like I looked at that blue and red flag of North Vietnam with the yellow star in the middle of it. That is the enemy's flag now, just like it was when we fought against them in Quang Tri Province back in 1969.
Yes.
To me, that striped flag represents the government of Washington, D.C. It doesn't represent us anymore.
Hell no.
That's been taken away from us. That, to me, is the enemy's flag. And I'll be damned if I'm going to ever stand and pledge to their flag. And that Pledge of Allegiance was written by that Bellamy, Francis Bellamy, who was a socialist and a South-hating socialist. And that's why he threw that line in there about the country is indivisible. You know, that was a slap in the face at Southerners. So, no thank you. I want nothing to do with their government. Will not support it any way, shape, form, or fashion like that. I'm not going to go join the Russian army right now, but if the Russians invade, I'm sure not going to put my life on the line again for this rotten government in D.C. to fight anybody that's coming in here to take over the country. How could the Russians do any worse than what we've got now?
Or
the Chinese communists?
If the Russians
didn't tear down the monument and the Chinese communists hadn't gone through and renamed all of our military bases for Mao Zedong and General Giap and Ho Chi Minh and all of that, they didn't do that. That's our own government that has nothing but contempt for us. So anyway, Nancy, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sister Nancy, go ahead.
And we also have a lot to, we should be calling Senator Elizabeth Warren. I have called her office and told her what I thought, or left messages about what I thought about that Yankee bag. She was certainly instrumental in pushing this idea of overturning the names of the forts that were named for Confederates, and actually this destruction of this monument. My question right now is, what have they? Is there any way that they will put this on the battlefield where Moses Ezekiel fought? Or are they going to melt this thing down and give it to the blacks to create another disastrous monument?
Supposedly there is a ray of hope there. Supposedly the governor of Virginia, Glenn Youngkin, I believe that's his first name, wants it moved to New Market, on the battlefield there at New Market. So saving grace to a certain extent, but because Moses Ezekiel was there with the cadets from VMI and, of course, made that charge right at the end of the battle and went up that hill and captured that federal artillery battery there at New Market in a rainstorm. And I hope that's going to come to fruition. I hope he's not just talking and the National Republican Party whispers in his ear about we have to have a big tent and we have to get all of these illegals voting Republican that are coming in here. And we really shouldn't do something like that. It might upset somebody. So let's don't do that. You know, I think Samuel Francis, the syndicated columnist, had it right. He said, we have the evil party, the Democrats, and then we have the stupid old party, which is the Republican Party. And
he sure did have it right.
They do. I mean, the Republicans win by landslides because they can't stand the Communist Democratic Party, and then they turn around and do the exact same things that we voted against. And, I mean, why do we vote for the Republicans if they're going to do the same thing that the Communist Democratic Party does? So I hope they are going to move it to Newmarket. I hope so. So at least keep it in Virginia, and it would put it on the battlefield where Moses Ezekiel was. He was there on the field. So that might be one saving grace anyway.
Yes, we can hope for that. It's
so,
just
Nancy,
really frustrating.
Go ahead with the information you have.
I have something here from, actually, I had this filed away in a book about President McKinley. This is something I copied in 2008. And actually, when I get to the end of it, I think it will explain part of the reason that this thing got lost, although they could care less, really, but I mean, the government could care less. But anyway, this is from 2008. It's just it's kind of a little picture about the monument in Arlington. It says, "The history is alive at historic Arlington National Cemetery." Yeah, it used to be, I guess. "There are 245,000 servicemen and women, including their families, buried at Arlington. Arlington National Cemetery is located in the shadow of the Custis Lee Mansion, Arlington House, that was home to General Robert E. Lee and his family until the beginning of the war between the states. In 1864, Union soldiers were first buried here. That was done as an insult. And by the end of the war in 1865, the number rose to 16,000. The Union burial site at Arlington National Cemetery is located in Section 13. Arlington is also the burial site of President John F. Kennedy, General Jonathan M. Wainwright, and the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. Arlington is also the burial site of men who fought for the Confederacy, and that's located in Section 16. In 1898, United States President William McKinley, who was a former Union soldier, spoke in Atlanta, Georgia, and said, quote, "In the spirit of fraternity, it was time for the North to share in the care of graves of former Confederate soldiers," unquote. In consequence to his speech, by act of the United States Congress, a portion of Arlington National Cemetery was set aside for the burial of Confederate soldiers. At this time, 267 Confederate remains from near Washington, D.C. were removed and reinterred at this new site. In 1906, the United Daughters of the Confederacy asked permission from William Howard Taft to erect a monument to the South soldiers. Taft was at the time serving as the United States Secretary of War and was in charge of the national cemeteries. With permission, the Arlington Confederate Memorial Association was formed, and the United Daughters of the Confederacy were given authority to oversee work on the monument. An agreement and contract was made with Sir Moses Jacob Ezekiel, who was a Jewish Confederate veteran, by the record of his service at the Battle of Newmarket while he was a cadet at VMI. On June the 4th of 1914, the Arlington Monument was unveiled to a crowd of thousands that included both former Confederate and Union soldiers. This memorial event was presided over by President Woodrow Wilson, and the people applauded the stirring speeches given by General Bennett H. Young, Commander-in-Chief of the United Confederate Veterans, George Washington Gardner, Commander-in-Chief of the Grand Army of the Republic, and Colonel Robert E. Lee, the grandson of General Robert E. Lee. Now, this is where the problem, I think, arose. It's possible. The Confederate monument unveiling was concluded by a 21-gun salute, and the Arlington Monument was officially given to the United Daughters of the Confederacy, and the UDC gave it back to the United States War Department.
Sister Nancy, hold that thought. We have to go to our second break of the third hour. Be right back, people.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Skip Kelly. Friday, the special counsel overseeing the prosecution of former President Trump for alleged election crimes faced a setback. The Supreme Court, at least for the time being, has decided not to consider a case regarding whether Trump is immune from prosecution for alleged crimes during his presidency. The High Court rejected a request from federal prosecutor Jack Smith to expedite the proceedings related to Trump's purported efforts to overturn the 2020 election. The Supreme Court order suggests an increasing likelihood that Trump's federal trial may not conclude before the 2024 election. President Biden is granting clemency to almost a dozen nonviolent drug offenders. He mentioned that these 11 individuals are currently serving sentences that are disproportionately lengthy, and if charged today, they would be eligible for lower sentences. Additionally, President Biden will issue pardons for additional offenses of simple possession and use of marijuana under the federal and D.C. law. You better take care of your heart between now and New Year's.
The period known as the most wonderful time of the year coincides with the highest incidence of heart attacks compared to any other time. Studies indicate a 37% surge in heart attacks on Christmas Eve, with a higher mortality rate attributed to heart attacks during the final week of December. Medical professionals attribute these trends to factors such as cold weather, heightened stress levels, and the tendency to overindulge in rich food and alcohol. I'm John Schaefer.
Toyota Motor Company said earlier this week that it is recalling 1 million vehicles over an airbag defect that could cause them not to deploy. The recall covers a range of Toyota and Lexus vehicles with model years from 2020 to 2022. The vehicles being recalled reportedly have sensors that were manufactured improperly. Dealers will inspect these sensors and replace them if necessary at no cost to the owners. Toyota will notify customers by mid-February if their car is included in the recall. This is USA News.
Omaha Steaks is rewriting the book on burgers with an all-new handmade texture for the juiciest home-style burgers you've ever tasted. Their pure ground burgers are made from single cuts of real aged Omaha steaks. These are truly steaks on a bun. Filet mignon, ribeye, New York strip, sirloin, and even brisket burgers. Now is the time to experience the exclusive Burger Perfection Flight for just $79.99. Go to omahasteaks.com and use promo code TREAT at checkout to get an extra $20 off your order plus free shipping. You'll get four of each pure ground burger so you can sample all the steak on a bun greatness. These burgers are crafted for a juicier, more tender experience, making your mouth water with every single bite. Don't wait. Go to omahasteaks.com. Use promo code TREAT at checkout and get $20 off the Burger Perfection Flight and discover your new burger obsession. Minimum order may be required.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I tell you what, we were in here with a good pair tonight, but we got old fire-eating Sister Nancy. She just got to hit me over the head, so I better just be good. But go back to Sister Nancy, see if she's got some more of that really sweet rhetoric. Lord knows, you know, she never gets out of control, never gets out of hand, never loses her temper. She tries to be real sweet and kind to the Yankees, but she says she don't think it's worth it too well. But what do you think about that, Sister Nancy? Are you still good buddies with the Yankees?
No. I'll just repeat that one line. I don't think I finished. That was the end of it. The Confederate monument unveiling was conducted by a 21-gun salute, and the Arlington Monument was officially given to the United Daughters of the Confederacy. And the UDC gave it back to the United States War Department for keeping and was accepted by President Woodrow Wilson, who said, "I am not so happy as proud to participate in this capacity on such an occasion. Proud that I represent such a people." Yeah, sure. That was way back many, many years ago that they were so proud to be part of us. And unfortunately, when the UDC gave this to the United States War Department, the Department of Defense is what has actually removed it as of this week.
Yep. Well, they've lied to a lot of us Southerners that thought we could trust the United States government and lay our life on the line for the swamp there in Washington, D.C. And they didn't mind us going out and being killed at Bella Woods or Incheon or Iwo Jima or places like that or Khe Sanh, any of those places. They were glad to have the Southerners killed there. But then when we came back to the States and they want to appease the thugs and criminals that won't join the U.S. military today, and that's why their recruiting is down so low. The garbage that they're trying to get into the military today can't even pass the physical, and you know, the decent people don't want to be associated with that filth and garbage, and they can't make their recruiting quotas. So now they turn against the Southerners and say, no, we don't want you anymore. That was okay for you to die for us, you know, the last two or three generations, but no, we don't want you anymore. So forget about what you did for us in the past. So I'm not forgetting about what they've done to us. I'm not going to forget it.
No way, Jose.
Nancy, didn't you have one more thing you wanted to talk about the letter from the Union soldier?
Yeah, it's something I have to read. I think it's, I don't know if you want to end with this. Maybe, I think you want to do book, you want to talk about a book review, and maybe
yeah,
I'll
I'd
end
like
with
to.
It.
We'll get this in, and if we have time, we'll get that, or certainly save it for next week or whenever. The book review I wanted to give to our listeners is by Mike Grissom, and he wrote Southern by the Grace of God and Last Rebel Yell, and then the last one he's come out with was a collection of Southern essays. But this is called the Southern Book of Quotes, and it has quotations from Southerners. And Bartlett's famous quotations that we all refer to is strictly from New England, and it's got pages and pages of Lincoln's quotes, but has practically nothing on Jefferson Davis or Robert E. Lee or Washington or Thomas Jefferson or things like that. And this is a great book. I would recommend it as a reference book. It's fun to just go through and flip it open and read, you know, start reading the middle of the book to the end or any number of pages. And the way he says it has it set up, it's chronologically listed, starting like with quotes from George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, George Mason, and then through Lee, Forrest, President Davis, and up through modern times, from columns from Samuel Francis, Pat Buchanan, Sam Dixon. And then even quotes from like Elvis, Jerry Lee Lewis, Loretta Lynn, Dizzy Dean. But the thing that really hit me the most on this, there were quotations from Southern governors that were fighting to preserve our Southern heritage and maintain our Southern cities and institutions. Governors like George Wallace of Alabama, Oral Farbus of Arkansas, and Ross Barnett from Mississippi, when the federal government, the Kennedys and Eisenhower, unleashed the federal troops and the federal marshals on the Southern states to force integration on the universities in the South, and what they did to the students and just the citizens in Oxford, Mississippi, that had nothing to do with protests or anything about the University of Mississippi being integrated. They just went through there like a bunch of communist thugs, clubbing people off the street and knocking them down and dragging them off to these gulags just because they could do it. And there was no armed resistance to fight them or anything. And that to me was a group of people, of individuals that we had in the South at one time that had some backbone, that stood up as best they could without getting violent or calling out their state militia to fight the U.S. government, to try to stop this onslaught that was being brought on the Southern people and the destruction of the Southern institutions. And they were like prophets. They were telling us what was going to happen if the blacks were forced into these schools and forced into with Lyon Lyndon's voting rights laws that he had and the civil rights laws in 1964 and 65, the immigration law that another one of the Kennedys threw off on us. What was going to happen to anything that was set up, operated by, and run by the blacks? It was going to be a disaster. And they've been proven absolutely correct. When you look at what has happened when cities have black mayors or black city councils, and what has happened in Baltimore, in Atlanta, in Memphis, in Detroit, in Chicago, in, you know, Birmingham, New Orleans, wherever you want to go, it has been an unmitigated disaster, not only in neighborhoods, but school districts, cities, and in countries like Haiti, like what they've done to Rhodesia, how they've destroyed South Africa. And it's really, I guess, eye-opening to go back and see what these people predicted back in the 1950s and 60s that was going to happen, and sure enough, it's all come true. And it also has quotes from a lot of Southern historians in there, like Clifford Doughty and Thomas DiLorenzo, Clyde Wilson, Donald Livingston, Andrew Nelson Lytle, Emmy Bradford. So I'd really highly recommend that if you just want to get some good information and information from people who were highly intelligent, who were prophets in their day, and just like the prophets in the Old Testament and the Bible. A lot of times they were martyred because they didn't want to hear what these people were saying, but it's all come true. And two of the quotes that have really stuck in my mind, and we've actually used one of them on Blood River Radio, was the quote that Robert E. Lee made about if those people, referring to the Imperial Empire's army from the north, if those people win this war, the United States will become a bully abroad and a tyrant at home. And that has certainly come true. And the other one, I would just like to read one short paragraph here, came from Irish-born Confederate General Patrick Claiborne. And he said, "Surrender means that the history of this heroic struggle will be written by the enemy, that our youths will be trained by Northern school teachers, learned from Northern school books their version of the war, and taught to regard our gallant dead as traitors and our maimed veterans as fit subjects of derision." And that has certainly come to pass.
Yes. The prophet Daniel couldn't have done any better.
Absolutely. And you go back and the first couple of segments, we were talking about Arlington and why did it happen and why were we lied to and why did the government never have any intention of doing anything. Well, those gentlemen from over a century ago knew exactly what was going to happen. And they had faced this vulgar nation that had invaded us, and it's still vulgar today, and seen what the result was of their ambition and their hatred for anyone who stood in the way of the all-powerful central government. And they just said, if we lose, we lose everything. If they lose, they go back to their little businesses and their banks and their little shops and continue right ahead without the South. But if we lose, they will not only destroy our armies, they'll destroy the culture of this region of the country. They'll destroy the government. They will replace the government in Washington with a virtual dictatorship. And that's exactly what has happened. And you see today that y'all were talking earlier, we don't have a constitution and nobody's going to enforce it. And they have the judicial system is rotten to the core. They don't follow the law. They just do whatever they want to do or whatever the dictates are of the executive branch. So it's interesting to go through there and read what these people said 100 years ago and or what they warned us about and what they predicted and see how it's come to fruition today for the central power. So it's called The Southern Book of Quotes by Mike Grissom and Christopher McBrew. And I think it's going to retail for about $23, something like that. And
well worth the money.
Oh, gosh.
I need to get a bunch of those for our listeners.
359 pages.
Wow, that's a bargain, Gene. Well, folks, we'll be right back. We got to go to our last segment, unfortunately, as soon as we get back this break. I got a comment or two as soon as we come back, and we'll hand it back off to Sister Nancy. Be right back, folks.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey? Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
Do you treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty, too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I can't believe this is the last segment. I'm going to throw out a little comment to Gene and Nancy. They both lived through what I lived through, people. Soak this up right here. I remember in 1957, after Brown versus Board in 1954, it said that, you know, we got to have these humanoids got to go to school with us, our chillings. You know, they're nothing but just half humanoids. I mean, you look at any intellectual test, any IQ test, any look at them in real life, how they live. They're nothing but a bunch of animals. But anyway, here we go. Brown versus Board in 54, I think Little Rock Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas was probably the first school to be hit hard. It was integrated in September 1957 when I was 10 years old at Bayonet Point. The communist son of a bitch Eisenhower sent the 101st Airborne in there and with bayonets affixed, sticking bayonets in the faces of white children, white elementary people, white high school children, trying to stop that travesty. Little Rock Central was a high school nationally known for their academic excellence and their sports excellence. A couple of years later, I think in 1961, the process was repeated at Ole Miss when the United States Army was turned loose on white people there. And I think 62, 63, they went to Tuscaloosa, the same thing, sticking bayonets in people's faces. And this is what I was telling Gene and Nancy, that what breaks my heart is the people, the white people that risked their life, and people were killed during that time trying to resist that communist takeover, that communist, you know, forced integration. People were killed fighting that. Those people, the people that were killed and the people that weren't killed that fought against that, their grandchildren now will fight you to the death over one of these darkies because they might want to score a touchdown for the Rebels or score a touchdown for the Big Orange or the Crimson Tide or the Arkansas Razorbacks. They'll fight you to the death over one of these nigs. And that's what just breaks my heart. And that's what that's what happened when the communists infiltrated our school system. Nancy, take off on that and pass it to you. Go ahead, Gene.
Eddie, to bring you up to date on that, the blacks tore Little Rock Central High School to pieces. They destroyed the school when they put them in there. The whites had to get out. It wasn't safe for whites. They had to get out of there, go to private schools, move out of that whatever county Little Rock is in and get the hell out of that county. They destroyed that school. The only thing they could do with it, like they've done in Selma, Alabama, that the blacks had destroyed downtown Selma and turned it into a ghost town. So just like Selma, the only thing they could do is make a civil rights museum at a Little Rock Central High School because the blacks destroyed it.
And you know what? That school was known nationwide, Gene, for its academic excellence.
Exactly. It was. And then it was the windows were broken out. They ripped the plumbing out of it. You had to go in there armed to the teeth just to survive going down the hall. And finally, they just had to close it. and it was a death trap, is what it was. And so they abandoned it as a school and turned it into a glorious civil rights museum and put up all that propaganda and garbage. And I'm sure it probably looks like those civil rights museums they have in Selma with weeds growing up around it and plywood over the broken out windows and stuff like that. So that's the result of it. And these people, the governors back in the Southern politicians back in the 50s and 60s warned us this was going to happen. You don't know what you're doing, but this is going to happen. And sure enough, it did. So I'm sorry to throw that little extra history in there, but I think we need to know what the result is of this communist takeover and this communist policy that they've forced upon us. Nancy, go ahead.
Well, you know what, Nancy, one quick comment here. All they would have to do to know what was going to happen in Little Rock Central was to go over to the Belgian Congo, go over to Zimbabwe, what was Rhodesia, and look and see how these humanoids live, how they treat their own women, their own kids. I mean, they've lived like they're worse than cannibals. They were cannibals. They're worse than animals. They're vicious and violent. And they should take that. What we need to do is purchase that school, Little Rock Central High School, and make that into a giant monument of this wonderful diversity these damn Jews keep talking about. Go ahead, Sister Nancy. I hope I didn't cut you off too much.
Well, we had something like that happen here in Louisville, too. And the police, which is, people always think the police are going to protect them. Well, no, what happened is the police were in jumpsuits that didn't have their name badges on. And this was written up. It happened in the southern part of the city. And they brutalized people. We were protesting against them. Now, the area where that happened, which was written up, it actually happened too in the area where my father had a business, and somebody broke the window out of our dry cleaning business. But what I'm getting at is we had a similar thing happen, and I'll have to go back to the people in the 50s. You wonder how they knew what the forecast was going to be, because most of us grew up around blacks.
Yes.
We had blacks in our home. We had black employees. And people in the South knew about blacks. They were raised with them.
But the Kennedys weren't. And
oh, hell no.
They didn't have them up there in Hyannisport, and Eisenhower didn't have anything to do with them except, you know, he was a big general, and there were black enlisted people running around shining his boots and driving his Jeep and stuff. But he didn't have anything to do with them. So, but it's always good for somebody else, but not where we live in Hyannisport or Ike's farm there at Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. They don't want them around there. So, yeah, that's right. The hypocrisy of this whole civil rights movement that was thrown off on us. So, Nancy, what else are you going to have for us?
Well, I have something that's going to read, and it is people who have never read about the South. They don't really understand how our people suffered. First of all, the man on the street, our soldiers were simple people who had been farmers. They were not in the military as such. We didn't even have a military to begin with. But this is an experience that was written up by a Union soldier. I don't know if I'm going to have time to read it the full thing, but maybe I will. I'll try to read it.
Yeah,
this is
minutes.
An article written by Reverend Robert J. Burdett, who was a Union soldier. This incident occurred at the Battle of Corinth. This is his comments. We found a dead Confederate lying on his back, his outstretched arm stretched across the stock of the rifle lying by his side. He was one of Rogers' Texans. 57 of them we had found lying in the ditch of Fort Robinette. I covered his face with a slouch hat and took off the haversack slung to his neck that it might not swing as we carried him to his sleeping chamber, so cool and quiet and dark. After the savage tumult and dust and smoke, after that day of horror, empty, isn't it? Asked the soldier working with me. I put my hand in it and drew out a handful of roasted acorns. I showed them to my comrade. That's all, I said. And he has been fighting like a tiger for 2 days on that forage, he commented, We gazed at the face of the dead soldier with new feelings. By and by, he said, I hate this war and the things that caused it. I was taught to hate slavery before I was taught to hate sin. I love the Union as I love my mother better. I think that this is the wickedest war that was ever waged in modern times. I'm hearing something in the background, but this, and he took some of the acorns from my hand. This is what I call patriotism. Comrade, I said, I'm going to send these home to the Peoria transcript. Wow. I want them to tell the editor that this war won't be ended until there is a total failure of the acorn crop. I want the folks at home to know what manner of men they and we are fighting. That was early in my experience as a soldier.
Wow.
It never changed my opinion of the cause of the Confederacy. I was more and more devoted to the Union as the war went on. But I never questioned the sincerity of the men of the Confederacy again. I realized how dearly a man must love his own section who will fight for it on parched acorns. I wished that his love and patriotism had been broader, reaching from the Gulf to the lakes, a love for the Union rather than the state. But I understood him. I hated his attitude towards the Union as much as ever, but I admired the man. And after Corinth, I never could get a prisoner halfway to the rear and have anything left in my haversack. Oh, I too have suffered the pangs of hunger for my dear country, as all soldiers have done now and then, but not like that Confederate soldier did. We went hungry at times when rain and mud or the interference of the enemy detained the supply train. But that man half starved, that's different. Other haversacks we found that night on Corinth Field with a slight ration in them. Sometime it was a chunk of corn pone. I used to think hardtack filled the order for concrete breakfast slab, but corn pone a week reconciled me to soft food. Hardtack for mine. So the Southern people loved the states for which they suffered. This is signed by Reverend Robert J. Burdett, a gallant Union soldier.
Wow. It looks like that guy would have figured out that they weren't fighting just to save some stinking Union or for some stinking slavery, but for a higher cause. Gene, why did that Yankee soldier not figure that out?
Well, I think... You know, in a situation he was, what was he going to do about it? I mean, he could desert and go over to the Confederate lines, but you know, if he ever got caught, they'd shoot him as a deserter.
I don't think
if he went back to Illinois or wherever he came from, he wasn't going to change many people's minds back up there, and I doubt that Illinois, the Springfield Telegraph or Illinois Telegraph, that newspaper, whatever he was talking about, was going to run anything that was detrimental to the war effort. So there were a few decent people that had their eyes open when they came down here, but not enough to change the course of the war. But, you know, a year later there, Corinth was 62. A year later, they had those huge draft riots in the North. There were a lot of people that were disgusted with that. The New York City draft riots were one of the most bloody battles that were ever fought in the war. And those were Yankees killing other Yankees.
They were killing Negroes. Remember, they were killing blacks.
and they killed the blacks in New York, in the streets of New York, and hung them and threw the rope over lampposts and hung them up and set the bodies on fire. That's what they thought of the blacks in New York City.
Well, Gene, Brother Gene, and Sister Nancy, we've come to a complete end of this hour. Y'all have done one hell of a marvelous job. I'll have to get a copy of that letter you just read, Sister Nancy. Well, God bless you, Gene. God bless you, Nancy. Thank y'all so much for coming on tonight. Thank you, Lizzie, for running the board flawlessly. And thank you, Sister Monica, for coming on earlier. D. Dear Blood River Radio audience, we will be here the 30th, God willing, 1 week from today. We'll have a program after Christmas. So Merry Christmas to you people out there.
Merry Christmas, everyone.